Welcome in to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Sunday, April the 11th, and I just got done watching golf until my eyes were bleeding. So it's very fitting that we get to come and talk some football on this beautiful Sunday in Fort Worth. It's about 90 degrees outside. Feels awesome. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jack Wallace. Jack, how you doing on this Sunday without football as we gear up for the draft in a couple weeks?
I'm doing very well. For you that mentioned you watched one sport that was deemed as not being very entertaining, I watched another sport deemed as not being super entertaining, which is baseball today. Went to the Rangers-Padres game, which it actually was not a very good game. It was a 2-0 win for the San Diego team. So not super ideal there, but we're happy to get into some football talk. It's always time to talk about football, even if it's not football season. And actually, technically, it is football season. If you want to count FCS football, played some games yesterday. I actually watched a little bit of the Delaware State-Delaware rivalry game as it was on when I was getting my hair cut. So I decided to sit there and watch a little of that. But starting it off, we're going to go through the NFC North today. Before that, we're going to have a little bit of updates in here. And there's the big one. We're going to wait for the big one just because that'll be an actual discussion. But just a couple of things to point out. Falcons are officially getting the London home game. It will not be the added Jags matchup. So the Jaguars are going to be the other one. Falcons, we're not entirely sure who they will play yet in London, but that news will come out soon. The ACC is eliminating sitting a year for interconference transfers in a unanimous vote. So pretty big news there. Teams will no longer, of course, have to wait if you want to have a player come in after transferring from another school there. And Justin Fields gets a 4:44 40-yard dash time, which is the second fastest by anyone since RG3 out of all quarterbacks since 06. So, yeah, big time moves here.
Moving. And the thing is, he's not a super – I mean, he's obviously mobile and very athletic, but he's a pocket passer. Like, he is a true pocket passer. He doesn't look to scramble all the time, which I think separates him from a lot of guys that have come before him that have been really athletic, scrambling kind of type quarterbacks. He has the athleticism to do it, but he chooses to stay within the system and stay within the pocket, and that bodes really well for his pocket mobility.
Yes, it's not his go-to move, but it's always an option for him. And right. Last news on here, Atlanta is officially opening to trading the number 4 overall pick, which is pretty big news as it was pretty much looking at the board of it. It seems very difficult for Atlanta to have a bad option. We'll get more into them once we get to the NFC.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago. I think they should absolutely trade the number 4 pick.
Yeah, they could get if you don't think
you need a quarterback, you can get a lot for that spot.
Exactly. And that'll be very interesting to see their moves they make there. Finally, our last big piece of news before we move on to the Packers up first. Sam Darnold officially traded out of New York. He has escaped and he is on his way to Carolina, where he will be playing for, of course, the Panthers. So pretty interesting move here. Obviously, this is going to shake things up with Teddy Bridgewater, as he is pretty much certainly going to be out. So who wins here? Do the Jets win?
Obviously, Carolina wins.
Does anyone win?
But I think this is a big move for Carolina as a franchise, given the fact that they spent a lot of money in free agency this year. They've got Christian McCaffrey coming back next year off of injury. This is going to be a ready-made team for Sam Darnold to step into that can at least get 6 wins, I think, is really the goal here, kind of their median if you play this season 100 times. That being said, I don't necessarily think that at this point in his career, Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than Teddy Bridgewater. I think Teddy Bridgewater is the better quarterback on the field right now. Now you're not banking on who's the better quarterback on the field right now. That's why you signed Teddy Bridgewater to a 2-year deal in the first place. But you're banking right now that eventually Sam Darnold is going to be better than Teddy Bridgewater. And I mean, I am optimistic with what he can do with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator, because we saw how Joe Brady revived Joe Burrow's LSU career. We saw how Teddy Bridgewater was playing pretty well at some points last year. They were able to play really well against some of the worst teams in the league on their schedule. And I'm confident that Joe Brady can figure out this Sam Darnold crisis. And with the receivers they have in-house, I think that's certainly an option.
And I don't think that the Jets did that awfully here, because at the end of the day, if you're New York, you got rid of a quarterback who wasn't producing anything for you. You got three good picks out of that, and you're going to be getting a quarterback anyway in this draft. So, and that quarterback's probably going to be an upgrade. And Zach Wilson is the leading candidate.
Yeah, and I was about to throw in there, I mean, the leading candidate as of right now is Zach Wilson. He's sort of the leader in the clubhouse. That's sort of the consensus pick there. So if you look at the other side of this, I mean, what do you think about the Jets starting their rebuild here, really starting from scratch with the quarterback position and getting Zach Wilson? This could be all a giant smokescreen and they could be taking Justin Fields, but it certainly doesn't look that way, as Zach Wilson has met with them multiple times virtually. And they were at his pro day, and all signs point to Zach Wilson.
I would be pretty shocked if it's not Zach Wilson, because we already know number one is going to be Trevor Lawrence. I think that's as much of a lock as you could possibly make it.
A lock.
I mean, yeah, it's known. Well, that's going to be done. So then everyone else after that's where it gets interesting. And again, it seems like Zach Wilson's going number two. Number three is still San Francisco as of right now. And if Zach Wilson doesn't go at two, he is going at three. I can't possibly see how Zach Wilson's going to drop out of the top three. Justin Fields, maybe. But again, with the San Francisco 49ers moving up to number three, I'd be pretty shocked if he didn't go there, which then leaves the Falcons
at four, which would be very interesting. Mac Jones is certainly in the equation. I mean, Kyle Shanahan certainly seems to be very keen on him.
Let me rephrase that. I would agree with your comment. I would disagree with doing that. I would disagree with doing that as well.
I'm not taking the risk on Mac Jones, but
yeah.
I mean, Kyle Shanahan has been known to use kind of irregular players at every position, sort of going against league trends there. But let's move on to talk about our subject today, which is the NFC North. We're going to try to spend a few minutes per team here discussing each team as we go along. Let's start at the top of the division with the Green Bay Packers. They were 13-3 last year, good for first in the division, made it all the way to the NFC Championship, guided by an MVP season from Aaron Rodgers, where he had the number two ranked offensive line. And this offense put up a +140 point difference for another big time winning season from a team that we've been skeptical of in the past. And I know we have so much faith in Aaron Rodgers, but the management, the front office, seems so averse to adding any sort of weapon that Rodgers can do anything with other than Devontae Adams. So, I mean, where do you go from here if you're the Packers? You had as good of a season as you could possibly have, and you still lost in the NFC Championship game. You still couldn't get over the hump because at the end of the day, the Bucs were more talented.
This is a moment where if you're a Packers fan, you're feeling exhausted because you have a quarterback that is going to go down as one of the greatest to ever touch a football without pretty much any debate.
Towards the end of his career, too. We don't know how much longer he's going to be around.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers very obviously is going to go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play football. That's not really a question. But with that, at this point, you have him playing a spectacular season, getting an MVP convincingly. You have the number two ranked offensive line. You had a +140 point difference. You ended the season, regular season, on a 6-game win streak and dominated the Rams in the divisional round. Dominated them. And this is a Rams team that, yes, they were much better than they had a quarterback. I get there were a lot of issues with that Rams team, but it was still no question. Then you went up against
the best ranked defense in the league
with pretty much nobody out. So on the defense. So yes, still. And you put up 32 on him. Like, it was the defense didn't do anything. And so Rodgers throwing for 300 yards, Jones done 99 rushing. It was a dominant game. And so then you move on to the Bucs. You host the Bucs. You have fans back in the stadium somewhat. You have the cold conditions up there. You have everything going for you. And you somehow choke the game away. And maybe some of it's just Brady in the playoffs. Maybe some of it's just it wasn't their time. I don't know. But this was a game that in a season that was just exhausting for Packers fans. Because again, if you're at 13-3, you really can't complain a lot because you have Bakhtiari, who again was out for that game. Note that Bakhtiari was out for that game against Tampa Bay, which was big. And Jenkins, too, great job on the left side of that line. Quarterback, you can't get any better. Running back, you have Jones re-signed, Jamal Williams is out. And then wide receiver, you have Devontae Adams, who's playing out of his mind. And so it's like, it's really tough to kind of blame a lot. I get everything I just talked about was offense, too. And I get there are some serious issues, at least on the defensive side. And again, wide receivers, it falls off after Adams. But still, it's like, it's frustrating.
But you look at the opposite side of the line, the opposite side of the ball, and they have a lot of talent in the secondary. This was a secondary that was able to stifle several good offenses, including the Titans offense. Jair Alexander, had a terrific year. Another terrific year. He is an elite corner at this point in his career. Darnell Savage had a good year. Adrian Amos had a good season. So really, we're just looking at replacing Kevin King in the secondary, but there are holes all
over. Ooh, forgot about that.
Yeah, there are
holes, man,
all over this offense. If you look at the depth spots, because they need a wide receiver too. Valdez Scantling's not going to cut it. They need a tight end to back up Robert Tonyan that can eventually come in and take over for him. They need the entire right side of their offensive line to be reworked, and they need to replace Corey Linsley. So this is a team that simultaneously was very good last season and also has a lot of holes to fill. It reminds me a little bit of the 2016-2017 Falcons, and I am worried that they are headed the direction of the 2020 Atlanta Falcons.
And I do think that that actually is a pretty good comparison, because it's a team that has a lot of talent on them, did very well, but a lot of big defensive holes that people kind of forgot about and then bit them in the end. And then to continue on that about the 2020 team, that I think is also a fair point, what it could be potentially is a team of a lot of older guys to where there's a lot of talent. But the one big difference between that comparison, the reason why I don't think it's going to happen to the Packers, is what was the biggest flaw of that Falcons team and the Falcons in the years after that? What was the number one flaw?
Offensive line. They couldn't protect.
No,
they couldn't.
It was Dan Quinn. That was your number one problem.
Trick question. You got me there.
That was your number one problem. And what did the Packers have? They have an infinitely more competent coach who was also on the Falcons staff at one point, but a way more competent coach. So that's why, for me, they could mess up some more, but I just don't see them pulling that, because you aren't going to get stuck with Dan Quinn for five more years than you should have had him. And that's, and yes, they can slip up, they can make mistakes, but can I say definitively that I really think the Packers are not going to get Rodgers another ring? No, I still think that they're very much in the running for that. And I would be kind of surprised if they didn't make any other kind of run again. I mean, they were only a few plays away from doing it this year. And if Kevin King, I don't know if you knew this, but actually got re-signed for the Packers for a 1 year, $6 million deal. But if guys like that don't make mistakes and mess up on games that big, you win that game, go to the Super Bowl, and who knows what would have happened in that game? Because honestly, it actually could have been rough too, considering how bad that KC O-line was. But anyway, it makes it tricky to sort of have to predict a lot of that. But looking ahead to the draft, we have 10 overall picks for the Green Bay Packers. Starting it off, we have the first round 29th overall pick, second round 62nd, and third round 93rd. So who are you looking for here if you're Green Bay? And if you say quarterback, I'm going to scream.
Yeah, I think this would be a great spot for Mac Jones. You got to start thinking about the future eventually. Even though you got a great team, I think you still got to look at the quarterback position and say, who is eventually going to take over after Aaron Rodgers? And not really worry about, Aaron Rodgers is going to be fine. Just don't really worry about filling out the roster other than that. No, they need a wide receiver.
Please draft a wide receiver.
I mean, fans who hate the Packers have been begging them to draft a wide receiver just so we can see what Aaron Rodgers can do with an offense that's actually fully filled out, and an offense that Matt LaFleur can actually work with, because I think that is going to be the key to them getting over the hump. While this offense can put up points, certainly with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, with just Devontae Adams and Marquez Valdez Scantling and Robert Tonyan scoring touchdowns and Aaron Jones now being one of the highest paid players on the team. What does it take to get over the hump? It takes playmakers. It takes having multiple guys on your offense that can get you a touchdown against the best defense in the league. And quite honestly, I don't think that's what they have right now in Green Bay. So I'm going receiver here. I think Kadarius Toney could be a good fit. I think Rondale Moore could be a good fit here. I also really like Elijah Moore in this spot, but I'm hoping he's gone by number 22. This is a team that needs weapons and they need receivers. And I will not tolerate them going in any other direction in this first round. We've heard Aaron Rodgers talk about wanting receivers too.
And that's the saddest thing is the team has Devontae Adams and is him blowing up, but it's saying like, if you can get some kind of stud alongside there with them, I mean, oh my goodness, this offense could be even better, which again, it's a great offense. There's very little to complain about this offense, but you can even make it better with this. There's still a glaring issue that just refuses to get fixed. Speaking of glaring issues that refuse to get fixed, next great up, segue. We have the, didn't even think of that before I said it. And I was like, oh wow, that worked out well. We have the Chicago Bears, which yes, the second place team here ended up going 8-8 and did make the playoffs, where we had the biggest highlight, I think, of the entire season. And you won an MVP trophy. Screw that. You want a ring? You want a Super Bowl trophy? I don't care about that. What I care about is the MVP, not the MVP, the NVP, which is known as the Nickelodeon Most Valuable Player, which went to Mitch Trubisky in the game against New Orleans, which, mind you, they did lose that game by a lot, and yet he won it because it was under fan vote, and the fans decided we need to make this as amazing as possible by giving it.
You leave anything up to a fan
vote. I was so proud of this. This made my year, seeing the Chicago Bears. And again, I did, of course, want them to win. They were against New Orleans. Of course, I wanted them to win, but it was like, man, you're really going to give it to Mitch Trubisky.
And
but,
they made the playoffs, though. That is the saving grace of all of this, is that they made the playoffs somehow.
How much would the Packers have beaten the Bucs by if they had the Bears defense? Just the Bears defense and their own offense.
They might still not have put up any points because Aaron Rodgers doesn't have any weapons.
Well, Tampa Bay wouldn't have scored any on them with this Bears defense going off.
Yeah, it would have been an entirely different game, that's for sure. But when you look at the Bears offense from last year, this is hideous. They were 23rd in the league in points per game. Let's look here. 26th in the league in total yards. I believe they had the league's let's check this out. 25th in rushing defense. They were in the bottom 20 in every major category. Rushing offense, that is. 22nd in passing offense. They were terrible on conversions. The only thing this team did well, they did average. This team couldn't do anything like actually well on offense. And for an offensive guru, quote unquote, like Matt Nagy is, it's still embarrassing. So what did the Bears do this offseason to fix it? First, they let go of Mitch Trubisky. Big win. Big win for Chicago. Love that move. And then they go out and sign Andy Dalton and promise him a starting job. What is going on in Chicago?
That is an excellent question that I do not have the answer to.
What are they putting in the deep dish pizza, man? I don't understand what's going on with this roster.
It's something that I think is incredibly difficult to figure out, because it's one of those where you have some solid positions, because you have Allen Robinson, who's playing great and he's doing a great job. And then you have Eddie Jackson, who's solid at safety. You have a fantastic linebacker core, really working great there. But then you go sign Andy Dalton. And then I get a huge piece of this was the fact that Deshaun Watson and that whole debacle, which of course is now way past the point of just worrying about free agency and now is exploded to a million other things. But it's that never panned out. You couldn't get any other big quarterback panned out. And it's saying Chicago, you obviously Chicago knows they need to have a real quarterback. Of course, they are aware, at least I would hope they're aware, that Andy Dalton is not a franchise quarterback. Go Frogs, but he's not. And you need to have somebody else big in. And clearly he's just plugging in for the season to say, stop the bleeding. We can do something here.
Barstool Big Cat is a huge Bears fan. And he had one of the best tweet takes about this, which was like, do you think Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace like high-fived after they made that deal? You think they were like really happy? Like, yes, we just got Andy Dalton going back to the playoffs, 8-8. Because offense doesn't matter. Apparently offense doesn't matter in Chicago.
It hasn't for a while.
For a while. Ever since they traded up to number two for Mitch Trubisky, a quarterback with exactly 1 year of college starting experience, who apparently was a project ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I don't understand how you can justify employing Ryan Pace at this point, I guess is my big point out of all of this.
Yeah, I don't really think there is much of a reason for it anymore. I think it's because it's just too inconvenient to not do it, which doesn't really make much sense. But it's hard to answer that. To be totally honest with you, it's really an enigma. But if you're the Bears right now, you're just trying to do anything you can to hold on and survive, is I guess their mantra at this point, which they aren't doing particularly well. But either way, the Bears need to be able to pick something up. So looking ahead at their draft options here, they have 8 picks overall. They have the 20th overall pick, the 52nd overall pick, and then the 84th overall pick here. And so looking at some of their options, D-end is one that could be help. Aziz Ojulari, D-end. Yeah, D-end out of Georgia, and Jalen Phillips, D-end out of Miami, as well as Ifeatu Melanoff. Wait, there's a thing blocking it. Melifonwu. Yes, I am bad at pronunciations. Cornerback out of Syracuse. Greg Newsome the second, another corner out of Northwestern. These are some guys that could be big impacts on this team. I know we're talking about a lot of defensive guys to help, but again, well, as you mentioned, losing Akeem Hicks as well as Kyle Fuller, you got to plug those back in, even though they're not huge holes in a defense that ends up is going to be really good overall. Those are still, if you can get the really solid rookie to get right back in there, that's going to be really huge.
If you still want your defense to prop up Nick Foles and Andy Dalton, I would suggest starting on that side of the ball and then worrying about the offense later, especially with the big holes left by Kyle Fuller and Akeem Hicks. We know this team tried to trade for Russell Wilson this offseason, and they were denied by the Seahawks. So I guess Andy Dalton, it was kind of the backup plan of, okay, we didn't get Russell Wilson. Now let's just press pause for a year and work on the quarterback situation again next year.
Also, I wanted to ask you this one thing before we move on to the Vikings and Lions, because they don't qualify in this group I'm about to mention. But if you add up the New York Jets, the New York Giants, the LA Rams, and the LA Chargers, the Chicago Bears, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Dallas Cowboys, which if you wonder why I listed all those, because those are all of the teams that exist in the top 5 markets in the United States. Top biggest markets, most fans, most money, everything big. Guess what their overall record was this last season, if you combine all those teams together?
Oh boy, let's see. Dallas had 6 wins.
And you can be general.
Philly had 7 wins. So there's 13. New York had, what was it? 6 wins and then 1 win or 2 wins. So there's 8. So there's 21. And then the Rams had 9 wins and the Chargers had 5 wins. Was I right? And that would come out to, let's see, 21 plus 14, 35.
Well, weirdly enough, you actually got a lot of the numbers incorrect, yet you got the total amount correct.
I knew I was somewhere around the total.
Yeah, because 35 is actually exactly right. But
I don't remember any. I was just remembering all of those off the top of my head, but I think I was within one win on every team.
Yeah, so it was Philly only got 4 wins. The Rams actually had 10, so a few of them were a little, but they combined to be the same. So 35, 68, and Philly 1. Philly got
4. I confused them with I confused the 2019 Eagles with the 2020 Redskins. That's what I
did. But that
football team.
Oh no, you've been canceled, my friend. I'm sorry. But moving on to the total wins of it, 35 wins, 68 losses, and 1 tie. For the top 5 market teams, why are the top market teams terrible? I really don't understand. Shouldn't this be a winning record?
The GMs and the owner and the ownership wants nothing to do with what the fans want. So they're going to hire coaches that the fans don't want, and they're going to hire GMs that get players that the fans don't want. And they're just going to keep, except for Dallas. Dallas is a unique situation in all of this. And I think the Eagles are on their way back up after giving up on Carson Wentz. I really want to see what they can get out of Jalen Hurts this year, especially after trading down.
And yeah, and I totally understand too that even with me making fun of this record, the Eagles are still only a few years away from being Super Bowl champions. You still have the Cowboys winning the division. And of course, not making a Super Bowl, but they have had winning records in a lot of years. And also, you have
the laughing stock of this crew.
Giants, you can kind of loop the Giants in. And, you know, Chargers are not far off of that.
At least the Giants have won a Super Bowl within the last, like, what, decade? Barely, but.
Yes, but I mean, to be fair, that team is entirely different now, because basically once all the players cycle out, it's back to just sort of being bad. And yes, the win still counts to mean something. That's why I hold more water with the Eagles win, even though the Eagles team is pretty different. But it still was only, what, 3 years ago? So, which seems kind of insane that the Eagles won a Super Bowl 3 years ago, but and then go 4-11-1. But it's, you know, the way football works. On to the Vikings. This team went 7-9, went third in the division, did not make the playoffs, despite both of us really high on this team preseason. We both really liked the Vikings and thought they would be pretty decent. They did not do that. Being 7-9 was not too great. Had a 5-1 run from weeks 8 through 13, which is a great midseason run after a 1-5 disaster start. But the big part of this team that was really painful was Danielle Hunter getting hurt, really hurt this defense. Ngakoue was gone. And the number 26th ranked offensive line with the 28th ranking in pass blocking made this team pretty difficult to watch if you like offensive line performances. So yeah, this was a difficult year for Vikings team that I think had a lot of people hyped up preseason.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly Danielle Hunter really, really dinged up that defense. And this defense is going to have to rebuild a little bit this offseason. They thought they could count on Jeff Gladney. We did not touch on this at the beginning because I forgot to write it in there. But Gladney was arrested this past week for family felony assault. And certainly the details of the report look pretty damning for him, a guy that we've supported,
turned himself in
a long time, but a guy that we, you know, obviously we're not going to stand for that. That's what happened was really, really horrific. But in a football sense, it means that now the Vikings are going to have to add one more corner, because they thought they were going to have their three corners figured out in Pat Peterson, Mike Hughes, and Jeff Gladney. That is not the case anymore. So I believe the next best defensive back on the roster is Cam Dantzler, and that's certainly something they're going to want to look to improve upon. But when Dalvin Cook is on the field, this offense is so explosive. Justin Jefferson had another breakout year, eclipsing 1,000 yards as a rookie and becoming one of the only wide receivers to do that in the last decade or so, one of those being AJ Brown of the Tennessee Titans. So certainly he looks like the most promising receiving prospect, even though he was taken, I believe, 4th out of the 5 or 6 receivers that were taken in the first round. I need to go back and look that up, but off the top of my head, that sounds about right. And Dalvin Cook, again, I'll say it again. I know I already said it. Had a big time year. Was a fantasy stud, and whenever he was on the field, this offense could move the ball on anyone. But again, the defense let them down in some spots. It was a little bit of a fall down to earth for Anthony Harris. Certainly, this cornerbacking core did not have a great year. And I think Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks are starting to get a little old out here. So take us through a little bit more about this roster and maybe where they can look in the draft.
So the Vikings have 11 overall picks, which is actually the most out of any NFC North team by quite a large margin. And with that, they start out with the 14th overall pick, of course, in the first round. They actually don't have a second round pick, but have two third rounds with the 79th and the 91st. That one's from Baltimore. They have four in the fourth round, two in the fifth, two in the sixth, and none in the seventh. A few of these are comp picks. I know, I think two of them are, and they have the Buffalo, Chicago picks in the fourth round. So got a few of these pieces moved around. Best fits in here. A lot of people are looking for a player like Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern, Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, or perhaps Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State. All these guys are offensive tackles. They need to rebuild this offensive line given how horrific its performance was last season. So any of that would be very helpful.
That's definitely priority number one.
First you can get
round.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if they can't get someone like that there, maybe it's a good spot to look for another cornerback that can be your third cornerback if you see a good value on the board there. But in round three, I think they've got a great opportunity to get a guy like Elijah Molden out of Washington or Andre Sisco out of Syracuse, both of whom I think could step into that Anthony Harris role and play pretty well. But yeah, a lot of moving parts on defense for this team for sure.
And one more note on this first round selection that the Vikings have to watch out for is the pick that's directly before them are the Chargers. And you know who else they badly need? An offensive tackle. So that's the one issue for the Vikings. If they want to take a tackle here, it's probably going to be between Slater and Darrisaw. And first pick of that is pretty much going to be going to the Chargers, because I can't see them not picking a tackle. And there is no way that Sewell is going to drop to 13th. That's just not possible. So he's going to be taken beforehand, which gives them the Chargers first selection. So if the Vikings maybe want to move up, I don't know who they're going to trade to do that, but I can certainly see them being a team that may want to, while the Chargers are a team that'd be very shocked if they did that. So that kind of moment for them. And finally, we have the Detroit Lions, which as long as we do this series, it may be a while before we hear them not being last. And I have nothing against the Lions, but the Lions. This season, they went 5-11, which was good for being last in the division. Of course, did not make the playoffs. And yeah, this team was a pretty typical Lions season. And it's just, this franchise is just like every year. I'm not even at the point where I think they're going to be good anymore. It's just like, okay, you exist. And that's the thing that you're doing right now, is you're just existing as a team. And Matthew Stafford, they're sort of hailing grace for a while, but needed help / kept getting hurt. Well, they traded him away. He's now with LA, which is a massive boost to the Rams, that we'll talk about them when we get around to them later. But the weirdest team is that I kept saying a lot of the season that I thought this Lions team was one of the better teams, the losing record. I had the same take with the Denver Broncos, where I was like, I really thought they weren't that bad until the last part of the season, because this team started at 4-5 after beating Washington, and 4-5 for the Lions 9 games in, that ain't bad. That's not bad. The problem is when you start 4-5 and then you end the season 1-6, that doesn't help. So ending the season 1-6 is not very good. Including that was a 20-0 loss to the Panthers. You lost by almost 20 to the Texans, beat the Bears on the road somehow, and then lost to the Packers, Titans, Bucks, and Vikings. And many of those games are pretty rough, but again, it's you're not playing a pretty good team. This was a pretty rough season at the end of it for a Lions team that really had a really, really respectable start to the season. I mean, they had wins over the Cardinals, Jags, Falcons, and Washington football team in that four game, in the four wins they had. The losses were still pretty good losses, considering it was only by 4 to Chicago, bad loss to Green Bay, but then only by 6 to New Orleans, which was pretty shocking. And then a big loss to the Colts as well as the Vikings in there. So again, not awful, but they really fell apart. But guys that I really loved on this team, I really love what TJ Hockenson did. Very big breakout here at tight end. We'd love to see that. Quarterback with Goff will be interesting to have him plugged into there replacing Stafford. And Okuda, who didn't really play at all, is going to be a guy that's going to be big for next season. So pretty bizarre switch around with a lot of this team. But what are we thinking about some of the other moments and pieces of this Lions team?
Take the best defensive player and call it a day in the draft. Because this defense was horrible. And when I say this defense was horrible, I really mean it. This defense was by far the worst in the league. They had a worse pass rush than Tennessee. They had one of the worst passing defenses in the league. And this was a team with a lot of injuries, but also it's now a team with a lot of holes. And Matt Patricia seemingly chewed up this entire roster and spit out one of the worst concoctions of defensive talent I've ever seen. All you need to do is go look at the stats. I'm not going to bore you with all of the stats right now, but they're bottom five in nearly every major, both major and minor statistical defensive category. So in short, this team was really bad. And what are they probably going to do is go for offense and try to replace one of their number one receivers. What should they do? Take one of the best overall defensive players, because you're going to have an opportunity to get one. Take a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, who can both rush the passer and drop back in coverage. Yes. Take the best
over Micah Parsons.
I think Micah Parsons could be great here too. I think Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn could both be really good.
Do you not want to trade down some of the other edge rushers?
It might be a trade down spot for Detroit, but I think they have to go offense here.
Defense, you mean?
Defense. I think they have to. That was clearly the number one problem with their roster. They haven't really addressed it this offseason. And now they've lost a bunch of pieces on offense too. So it's one of the biggest conundrums in the NFL right now. And it's probably one of the biggest disasters of a roster, because it's not like you can just start over on a roster from the 8th pick when you're in Detroit. This is a team that needs to land all of their picks, and it starts with the 8th pick, but they've got to land all over the board.
And I think that's a fair point, considering that we're talking about a team that struggled to that degree. You have to be able to replace that somewhat. And yes, to be fair, you are getting back a very competent cornerback and a guy in Okuda that didn't really play at all. So that is going to help this defense. So at least I would assume would help this defense somewhat. So getting Surtain to go right across that could make for a very dangerous secondary. Of course, a Horn or a guy like Caleb Farley, any of these top cornerbacks, I think could all be very solid NFL starters. It just depends sort of where you want to go. But on that end of it, I'm interested to see sort of how they function. I don't know if they would trade back, but at least for some guys like Micah Parsons, who is projected, I think, 12th at the best pick, I don't really know if you need to trade him or get him at 7. Though, of course, it is sort of the best available and whatever, and you might as well go ahead and take him off the board. If he's your number one guy, why wait for it? So there may be something like that, too. The problem
is that between Jared Goff and Trey Flowers this year, they're eating up $72 million in cap space. That's just dead cap hit. That's not even...
Goff too? God.
Yeah.
Man.
You forget that Goff signed that massive extension. That's why they haven't been super busy in free agency. They really don't have the cap room to do anything. This is a big Goff, reset. Like,
why Detroit. Would you do that?
I mean, anytime you fire the coach, and we've been kind of obvious about saying this, obviously anytime you fire the coach, it's a big reset year, but they've really got to press reset on this roster now with the new quarterback coming in. They got to figure out what they're going to do about Jared Goff's contract. They're clearly playing for the future, and I don't expect them to be any sort of competitive next year whatsoever. In fact, I expect Jared Goff to be out of the job in under 3 years. So I think that wraps it up for me. If that wraps it up for you, one more thing.
We have divisional champion picks. We may have forgotten to do this before. I forgot. But We have divisional champion picks. And with this, looking at the odds right now, I think I might roll with it, but I'm going to still keep with the Packers here. I think that they still have a lot of good material left in them. I think that having Aaron Rodgers, and I do believe they're going to have a decent draft form, really would help a lot. You get a decent wide receiver in this draft and go for it. I mean, we know that there's absolutely no way the Lions are going to win this division, and I don't think that the Bears are still in a good position with Andy Dalton to be able to win out on these teams. And even with the Vikings being last year, I still think that they have to reshuffle a lot of pieces here. And while I believe in them a lot last year, we picked them to win division last year, I don't want to make that mistake again. I think it's still going to be the Packers. So I think it might be a little closer than a 5-game difference to what happened this year.
I'm with you this year with two terrible teams, quite honestly, teams that are not going to be competitive for the playoffs, I think, in your division. It's going to be a pretty easy race for the Packers to win this division title should the Minnesota Vikings kind of go in the direction that I think they're going to go and take a little bit of a step back, kind of like they did last year. I think it's going to be kind of a runaway for the Packers once again.
And all right, that is now officially all I have on at least my side of things, finishing up here for this episode of the Blank Coverage Podcast with our exit interview series. Of course, the NFC North, Packers, Bears, Vikings, Lions. We'll all have our timestamps and everything up for y'all to be able to go through and check out this episode as well as all the other ones. If you're interested in hearing about any other teams or if your favorite team you still haven't heard from yet, well, fortunately, we're doing this with every team. So keep on the lookout for that. If your team has not been mentioned yet, we're still getting around to all the rest of them. We will have our next episode out, which will be on the NFC East, which will be certainly an interesting podcast. I am excited for that one. And whatever in the world happened with that division this year, we will dive into all the details. Everything else in the AFC has already been uploaded and set. So if you're a big AFC fan, you'll be good to go to listen to some quality content there. So here in Fort Worth, Texas, it's Jack Wallace
and Noah Parker. Peace out, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.